those scientific reports. The report is ready, yes. And let me invite Dr. Zemenaya with the scientific reports, numerical investigation of vesicular systems and pionuclear scattering with the asynchronous differential evolution methods. Please, 25 minutes.
Dear participants of this session, my name is Елена Земляная. I am working in Laboratory of Information Technologies, Division of Computational Physics. What I'm going to speak about is some kind of demonstration that the numerical methods, computer algorithms, including methods elaborated in our laboratory, in our institute, are the general purpose methods, and they can be helpful in very different fields of research. I will present results of numerical study of two very different physical systems. The first one is determination of parameters of structure of vesicular systems of phospholipids on the basis of analysis of small angle scattering data. And the second one is the microscopic analysis of pionuclear scattering. In both cases, at some stage of investigation, we met some difficulties with employment of standard, one can say, classical methods of minimization, which are needed to fit parameters of our models to experimental data. And in both cases, the global minimization on the basis of asynchronous differential evolution allowed us to successfully finalize our investigations and to obtain new results. This slide lists clusters in the asynchronous differential evolution elaboration, in pionuclear scattering, and in analysis of physical structure. From Joint Institute for Nuclear Research, Евгения Жабицкая, профессор Михаил Киселев from Frank Laboratory, профессор Валерий Лукьянов from Боголюбов Laboratory, also профессор Аксенов, доктор Константин Лукьянов, доктор Михаил Жабицкий from Joint Institute for Nuclear Research. Also in the investigation of physical structure, we collaborate with доктор Грузинов from Курчатов Institute, профессор Ипатова and доктор Дружиловская from Орехович Institute for Biomedical Chemistry. And our collaborator in pionuclear scattering study is our Egypt colleague, Dr. Ibrahim Abdul Magiat from Cairo University. Let me first of all very briefly characterize the asynchronous differential evolution method. I can be very brief because my colleague, which I have already mentioned, Евгения Жабицкая, already presented this approach in the poster session of this PAC in June. And she gave a talk on the September session of Scientific Council as a winner of that session. Asynchronous differential evolution is asynchronous modification of differential evolution global minimization algorithm, which is known as one of efficient, powerful methods of global minimization. This asynchronization allowed us to improve efficiency of parallel realization and allowed to make effective execution in a system with parallel architecture, like our hybrid cluster, for example. And also this approach was supplied by adaptive algorithms of calculation of parameters of this method in order to minimize participation of researcher in minimization process, and because this algorithm provide automatical tuning of asynchronous differential evaluation parameters to the features of concrete problem, like automatic restart with the automatic change of size of population, automatic rescaling factor calculation, and automatic adaptive calculation of correlation matrix. Sorry, how to come back? This diagram demonstrates advantage of asynchronous differential evaluation minimization with adaptive correlation matrix for the global minimization. This calculation was made for the case of fitting of parameters of the MPC physical system on the basis of a small angle X-ray scattering data analysis. You see that methods, so-called Migrat simplex algorithm, implemented in very popular MinUID package, are not effective in this case, while the asynchronous differential evaluation provides almost 100% successful result. And in set graph demonstrates decreasing of computational time in case we increase number of computational nodes, and we see that this approach provides acceleration about 100 times in case of calculation of parallel computational systems. Now let me come to the vesicle system. Vesicles are nano-size, close to spherical objects, some kind of brothers, which are very popular as a delivering system for the transport of medically active ingredients or cosmetically active ingredients into human organism in oral or via the human skin. So the study of structure of these objects depending on some external conditions is very important from the viewpoint of practical application. Also, the membrane of these vesicles is very close in structure to the natural biological membrane. So, investigating the artificially prepared vesicles, we can obtain new knowledge about biological system. And one more point in motivation is that the recent years in Orehovets Institute of Biomedical Chemistry, the phospholipid delivering nanosystem, PTNS, was elaborated with extremely small size, which was shown as to improve efficiency of drugs where it is used as the transport system. One of well-known two powerful tools of experimental study of vesicle system is small angle scattering of neutrons or X-rays. And analysis of experimental data is based on the separated form factor method, developed in our institute more than 15 years ago, and it is successfully used for all these years for analysis of small angle neutron scattering data, and recently it was extended for the analysis of X-ray spectra. This approach is based on the factorization of standard expression of intensity for the case of monodispersed physical populations scattering And this expression consists of two terms. The first one is responsible for the structure of spherical surface with radius of physical, and the second term is responsible for the structure of bilayer of vesicle and depends on the thickness of bilayer and its internal structure, describing by the function of density of scattering length density, which can be taken in this approach, in fact, in arbitrary appropriate form. One of examples is shown here, so-called two-step model. In fact, we use it, different models of density depending on what system we apply. Polydispersity of average radius of vesicles in population is accounted by means of Schur distribution and the employment of standard convolution procedure. And final expression of intensity includes also the terms responsible for the incoherent background and resolution of spectrometer. Parameters of vesicular system, like average radius, polydispersity, thickness of bilayer, and parameters of internal structure of bilayer, are determined by minimizing of difference between theoretical and experimental intensity. The minimization procedure is based on the standard least square method, and in case it is not workable, on the asynchronous differential evolution global minimization. This slide demonstrates our results of simulated four-factor analysis on different systems in different years. Without application of asynchronous differential evolution, we did not meet some difficulties to analyze the MPC vesicles depending on temperature and size of pores. Multi-component system modeling the stratum corneum stops level of human skin on the basis of ceramide 3 and ceramide 6, and the PPC vesicles depending on the concentration of dimethyl sulfoxide in the heavy water. As for the X-ray scattering, we need to complicate the density function. Number of parameters is increased, and in some cases we have to account for fluctuation of bilayer. And in this case, we need to apply asynchronous differential evolution global minimization, and which allowed us to make joint analysis of small angle neutron and scattering data on the MPC vesicular system, depending on concentration of sucrose in water. These results are shown in this slide. You see that we can reproduce both neutron and X-ray spectra, and I must note that the X-ray spectra, the right panel, the right the tail of this curve was reproduced only when we include the accounting for the fluctuation of bilayer. This slide demonstrates the first experience of analysis of phospholipid transport nanosystem nanoparticles. We made this analysis on the basis of separated four factors model and one more popular model, hollow spheres model. Results of radius of vesicles are in very good agreement, and they are in agreement with expectations of our colleagues from the Orehovich Institute. And more recent results, which are in preparation to publication, are the potential X-ray spectra depending on concentration of maltose in water. Because the radius of vesicles is small, we repeated this calculation not by means of full model without the separated four factor approximation. Results are quite close between each other. almost the same. It means that our approach on the basis of separated four factor is applicable for further analysis of PTNS system and another drugs on this basis. Now let me come to the pion nucleus scattering. We in this direction, we utilize the microscopic optical potential, which is constructed on the basis of high energy approximation and depends on the pion nucleon amplitude. It contains only three parameters with very clear physical sensor versus more than six parameters on the popular Kisslinger potential. And this potential is substituted to the respective relativistic wave equation in order to calculate cross sections. So we don't use full high energy approximation in this study, and this limitation of this approximation are expected to be flexible. Parameters of to be fitted are the parameters of pion scattering on nucleons inside the target on nucleons inside the target nuclei. These parameters are pion nucleon cross section sigma, total cross section alpha, ratio of real to imaginary part of the forward pion nucleon amplitude, and the slope parameter beta. These parameters we call to be in medium because they are responsible for the in medium pion nucleon scattering. They are established to experimental data. We made calculation in the region of energies covering the so-called three resonance energies, and on the right boundary of this region, the standard minimizers would be workable, but inside of this region, we needed to employ the asynchronous differential evolution in order to fit these three parameters. And then our approach was extended for the case of inelastic scattering. We applied the established parameters of pion nucleon amplitude. We generalized the density distribution and constructed in this way transition optical potential. In this way, only one new parameter is added, the deformation parameter, which is not problem to fit because it is responsible only for the shift in vertical axis of the spectrum curve and does not change the form of this curve. This slide shows the our relativistic Klein-Gordon equation, which was solved to calculate cross-section. It depends on the macroscopic optical potential UH, which has the following form, and which depends on the form factor of pion nucleus scattering amplitude in standard Gaussian form, and for factor of nuclear density distribution, which is taken in the symmetrized Fermi function form. This slide demonstrates some results of our calculation of elastic scattering with different energies in nuclei. You see that we can provide in our approach reasonable agreement with experimental data. And in order to confirm applicability of our approach, we make comparison with the Kisslinger potential, which is very, very popular in these studies. You see that in spite the forms of potentials are very different, both approaches provide comparable agreement with experimental data. And, And one more comparison was made with the phenomenological Wood Saxon potential. Also, our results are not worse than the results obtained with those potentials. So, in spite, number of parameters is only 3 versus 6 in Wood Saxon potential, phenomenological potential, and 12 in Kisslinger potential. Now there is extension of to inelastic scattering case. We generalize our amplitude using the standard prescription and then substituting it to the expression of potential and obtain in this way the transition optical potential U lambda, U lambda. There are results of both elastic and inelastic scattering for some nuclei and energies. Our calculations are shown by solid lines. You see that our approach provides agreement with experimental data. And for comparison, dashed lines show calculations with known from literature parameters of pine scattering on free nucleons. You see that we cannot use these parameters for explanation of pine nucleus experimental scattering experimental data at the energies under study. The only exclusion is the energy 291, where both sets of parameters are close and both solid and dashed curves are close to experimental data. A difference between in medium and free pine nucleon parameters are seen in this diagram, yellow by respective blue and yellow colors, and maximum of difference it is seen in both is as corresponds to the point of resonance, and the energy as the energy is growing, the difference between parameters is decreasing. So, some brief summary. The asynchronous differential evolution method of global minimization allowed us to successfully investigate two very different multi-parameter physical systems and obtain in these two fields new results. We have managed to investigate structure of the MPC PTNS spectra, to establish physical structure of PTNS and estimate parameters of this system. Also, we made the microscopic analysis of pine nucleus scattering using three-parameter macroscopic optical potential, and which allows one to observe the effect of nuclear matter on the pine nucleon scattering. That's all. Thank you for your attention.
Thank you very much. So maybe one, two questions. Professor Adam.
Well, I have just a remark. You mentioned a model with 12 parameters. Harry J. Lipkin, a famous physicist of the second half of the 20th century, said once that with 12 parameters, you may even fit an elephant. Thank you.
Yes.
5 it is enough, not 12. Okay. About fitting, yes, the question is, would you like to? What in general was comment, yes, about the fitting. Professor Fuss?
You showed that the radius of gyration varied with the concentration of your sugar, of your sucrose. How do you explain that?
Let me show this slide or this slide? This. On the left panel, you see a concentration, lower concentration. This results of neutron scattering. This depends on experimental features. The neutron scattering is more effective. The contrast is visible in case of low concentration. As we apply X-ray scattering, we must increase concentration in order to provide good experimental data.
But I think the radius must be independent of the solution.
Show them previous slide where it is the big R, because media and understanding.
Professor Radov, microphone.
Show the slide where there is the big R to understand what that means. Yeah?
Yes?
If no. Up.
Up.
Stop. You see? Big R is the organization of different molecules at different concentrations. This is not something unphysical. This is understandable.
What is
the small questions? D, the small d and big D, which are besides, they are very similar at different concentrations, and these characterize the small d and big D. They characterize a single unit, and for the single units, everything is okay.
Maybe Professor Kiselyov could explain, because
Professor Kiselyov would like to...
I can help with answer. Sucrose molecules replace the water molecules in the region of polar hill groups of the phospholipids. And by this way, it should influence to the membrane curvature. And it is not surprising, and it is very important that... with increasing of sucrose or other sugar, maltose, for example, the vesicles will be smaller relative to the water. In this case, it is more stable and it is more effective. The therapeutic effect depends on the size of vesicles. Smaller vesicles has larger therapeutic effect.
Okay, thank you for your help in order to elucidate maybe some discussing aspects. Other comments? If no, thank you. And let me invite Dr. Grigory Myshkin with the reports, spin dynamics and compounds with intermediate valence, comparison of inelastic scattering results to ab initio theory. Please, 25 minutes.
Thank you. Subject of my talk today is spin dynamics in intermediate valence compounds.
Please, microphone.
And I would also show some comparisons.
Microphone.
And I will show some comparisons of inelastic neutron scattering data with ab initio DMFT calculations. My co-authors from Material Science Division, Los Alamos National Lab, and Oak Ridge, listed here. I just give a very short description of the scientific background regarding systems which we are dealing with. Ground state properties, metallic rayos compounds, predominantly defined by a number of competing interactions of F electrons with, say, crystal field, inter-site magnetic exchange mediated by Ricci interaction and hybridization with conduction electrons. And depending on the which interaction dominates, we may have very different ground states. I just give four examples. One flecked paramagnetism, it's typical, very interesting example when the crystal field is the strongest interaction and magnetic order will not occur down to very low temperatures. Another example, it's magnetic ordered state. It's a lot of intermetallic compounds have magnetic order, and in this case, J exchange is the strongest interaction. And the most interesting and very popular nowadays systems, it's so-called Conde and heavy fermion systems. In this case, all three interactions have comparable values, and therefore the ground state could be magnetically ordered, superconducting, non-magnetic heavy on low magnetic moment order, or quantum critical state. So this is a very popular, I would say, it's a hot point in condensed matter physics. If we further increase the hybridization between local electrons and conduction electrons, then we will arrive to this intermediate valence state. And in this case, we have the hybridization between conduction electrons and local F states is dominate, and basically it will define physics of these materials. And as I said, the intermediate valence compound, sometimes it's called mixed valence materials, it's equivalent term, they arises from strong hybridization between F states and conduction electrons. It's this phenomena found for many cerium compounds and ytterbium compounds, and also for samarium and europium, but I will focus on cerium and ytterbium. The sort of fingerprint of occurrence of the intermediate valence is a temperature dependence of magnetic susceptibility. He has shown for ytterbium aluminium 3. So it has final value at low temperatures and it's nearly flat. So there is no Curie-Weiss type behavior, so no local moment. And instead we have a very, not very well defined, but small bump at about 130, 140 typical temperature for maxima of susceptibility as function of temperature. Fermi liquid model, which provides some links for specific heat, electronic specific heat coefficient, susceptibility at zero temperature, spin fluctuation temperature, and population factor, they quite important, and they work quite nice for majority of cerium and ytterbium compounds, and this is this relation, and they provide a good evidence for local physics of the intermediate valence materials. Just to illustrate how looks magnetic response function for in the case of relatively weak SF interaction, in the case of heavy fermion system and magnetically ordered compound, terbicobalt siglica. For example, cerium cobalt tin is probably heaviest heavy fermion system with a huge value of the electronic specific heat coefficient. Does show very ordinary behavior in terms of magnetic dynamics, just a crystal field transition, and it's hard to see on this graph, but there is also some quasi-elastic contribution. And this is crystal field system. Peaks can be nicely described by just standard phenomenological crystal field model. And nothing special, maybe just a slightly increased line width due to weak SF interaction. Otherwise, the standard crystal field model works well in this system. Ytterbium cobalt silica, it's quite rare to see an ytterbium compound magnetic order, but its orders are below 1.7 Kelvin. And again, we see nice crystal field peaks, and the same crystal field Hamiltonian can describe this data nicely. One of the way how we can drive system from the heavy fermion system, where we see nice crystal field peaks, to the mixed valent material is a chemical pressure. Ideally, it would be better to have hydrostatic pressure, but it's not possible to do an elastic scattering with pressures, say, higher than 4 or 5 kilobars, which is not enough. But in case of Rayor system, we have a yttrium or lanthanum, which produce positive or negative or ordinary chemical pressure, positive chemical pressure or negative pressure, to as it expand or compress lattice. And this is a unit cell volume as function of lanthanum and yttrium in the canonic as heavy fermion system cerium aluminium 3. And we see that how magnetism disappears upon doping with yttrium. So this is a magnetic susceptibility at 8 Kelvin, and this is a magnetic moment at 2 Kelvin, 12 Tesla field. So it goes down quite quickly. And what inelastic data shows, we see in the low energy range window and the medium energy range, so the crystal field transition, this is a quasi-elastic. Once we apply the chemical pressure, the spectral weight disappearing from this energy window quite quickly. And at the high energy, so at energies around 40, 60 MeV, this is a shaded area, we have some extra scattering, which is a magnetic in origin, and what we have, basically the spectral wave transfer from low and medium energy range to high energy range. And Anderson impurity model calculation predicts exactly this behavior as the parameter which describes strength of SF hybridization grows. So we have quasi-elastic and elastic in a mixed valence state, but we arrive to just one inelastic feature at relatively high energy. Once we drive system to the mixed valence state. And this is a quite common result for many other mixed valent materials, that at low temperature we have just one single inelastic feature, which sits at roughly at constant temperature and represent energy of the spin fluctuation in this system. We also did some measurements on the terbium aluminum 3 inelastic measurements at ISIS. And this material has a little bit unusual response side by side with an elastic peak at about 50 MeV, we have a narrow, sharp feature. And pops of this work was substitute ytterbium for lutetium. A little bit, lutetium does not produce very much chemical pressure. We just broke the periodicity in ytterbium sublattice. And what actually happened, this narrow peak very quickly degrading or decreasing in intensity once we substitute some 10% of lutetium. At higher lutetium concentration, it just completely disappears. At the same time, this broad inelastic peak is almost unaffected by lutetium dilution. Therefore, we decided that this peak is somehow associated with some sort of coherent excitation in this system. And this broad high energy peak is related to what we call Gonda peak, or the same peak which we saw in some other mixed valent materials. So this was motivation for to perform our first NS experiment on single crystal of mixed valent materials on MAPS. What we got completely different result in comparison with what we expected. So first of all, we done this on MAPS, 5 gram crystal, initial energy 120 MeV. It was fixed geometry. We have not rotated this crystal during the measurement. So what we found that this peak at 30 MeV, this red stripe, it does not show any Q dependence. This is a cut, one-dimensional cut on this graph here. It's at the two temperatures. It does not show any significant or noticeable dispersion in this case. But the high energy peak, which we expected to be a single ion in character, does show some very strong dispersion. We have these two blobs close to Brillouin zone boundary, and this cut along this E2 shown in this graph, we show the strong variation with Q. So it was very unexpected result, and the, generally when we started to think about further development or further experiments on this system, we knew that almost all inelastic experiments on mixed valent materials on powders, they show single inelastic peak at approximately 55 plus minus, you know, 5 MeV at low temperatures. Ferry liquid relation work fine, so you can relate all these numbers, all these quantities. Q variation is a pure form factor, no any deviation from the Q, from the form, besides form factor. And Anderson impurity model explains nice inelastic data. So all these observations, they clearly show that we are dealing with a single ion character of magnetic response, and essentially physics must be single ion in this system. But the problem was ytterbium-3, which show strong Q variation of the 50 MeV peak. So we decided to try and see what kind of response behavior we can observe in other mixed valent materials. We chose this canonic system, cerium-palladium-3. It's one of the first mixed valent materials which was discovered. And it was extensively studied with in powder form. Probably it was the first experiment with inelastic neutron scattering on the mixed valent material exactly 40 years ago. And the experiment was done on called Newton instrument, and the lowest temperature where they saw magnetic signal was just 100 Kelvin, so between 100 and room, it's a purely relaxational quasi-elastic scattering and without any obvious change in the line weights. Nearly 20 years later, Mirani repeated this experiment on HET at ISIS with episomal neutrons, and they saw nicely this magnetic peak, and again intensity and position of this peak scaling good with some other microscopic data, as I said before, according to Fermi liquid relations. So we decided to try and do inelastic scattering on the cerium-palladium-3 on a single crystal. It's a pretty big single crystal, about 15 grams. And I have to mention first two important developments which actually allow us to go beyond the standard or hand-waving type analysis or interpretation and perform a comprehensive quantitative comparison of experiment and theory. First of all, it's development of new generation of inelastic neutron scattering instruments at ISIS with large positive position-sensitive detectors which allow to measure the four dimensions Q omega. So the three components of the Q, QX, QY, QZ, and omega energy. In single crystals, yeah, by rotating the sample during the data collection. And critically important is the development of the powerful and user-friendly analysis software, which is called Horus. This is the afters of this method. And I have to say that this development of instrument technology at ISIS and software, I don't like loud words, but I think it's words would reflect reality. They open new era in the INS research with single crystals. Next development is a theoretical advance in the calculation of electronic excitation and strongly correlated electron system. It's a combination of density functional theory and dynamic mean field theory. I'm experimentalist, so I can't explain in details how this technique works. But I know that the major thing that they calculated response function include both a single particle and two particle vertex corrections. And this allowed to include both coherent quasi-particle and incoherent spectral weight, which is quite significant in this case. So it's also incorporated local correlation, Hund rule, and spin orbit coupling, as well as Aconda screening into the realistic band structure based on DFT. So DFT calculations have been done with this famous VN2K package. And this is the input parameter for the DMFT calculations. And output of this code, which does the DMFT calculations, it's a chi double prime. It's a dynamical susceptibility in units mBu square per mV per electron volt, which related through very simple relation to what we measure with neutron scattering, scattering law. And this is just illustration of this band calculations for two temperatures, 100 and 400 Kelvin. And in low temperature, we see nicely defined the bands, quasi-particles, which at high temperature, they slightly shift to high energies. But what's most important, the coherence getting weaker. I mean, we see a lot of this incoherent contribution, this area, reddish area, which is absent here. Yeah. So this is a very interesting effect, which has very strong impact on the magnetic response function measured at two temperatures. I show later experimental data. So it's just experimental results, details of what we measured. So we used two instruments, mostly Murium, and also some data we collected at MAPS. At ISIS, at Murian, incoming energy was 30, 60, and 120. We rotated crystal with 2-degree steps, so cover 90 degree of rotation. And the data, as I said before, we analyzed using the Horus software. And Max experiment was in fixed scattering angle. Ki was along 0, 1, 0 at 6 Kelvin and 3 and room temperature. Another important thing, the Murian experimental data we placed on absolute scale by normalization or normalizing the intensity to a vanadium standard. This is quite important because we can do a parameter-free comparison with experimental theory. This is a first example of one of the two-dimensional cuts of Murian data and at 35 and 60 MeV. And the it's a like LK type 2D cuts and slices. It's normally called slice. Yeah, and the evolution with energy quite obvious. We have at half point very bright spot for at 35 MeV and very low intensity at 60 MeV, and at half 0 point, there is a stripe of magnetic scattering, which is absent here. So, and evolution of the magnetic scattering as function of energy quite significant, and this is a calculated, DMFT calculated response. And it's exactly the same, as I said, because the calculation produces the same four-dimensional object, and we can take the same the same slices, and it's again it's nicely reproduce the experimental data or shows the same side of distribution of intensity for both 35 and 60 MeV slices. This is the omega L slices, again, two-dimensional. So in this representation, the magnetic scattering looks like a rods of magnetic scattering along energy axis. And it's two different, it's like different slices. It's at K0 and 0.5, but it's, of course, it's the same rods. And this is the calculated data. And they again reproduce nicely what we saw, what we see in our experimental data. This is a more precise, more detailed comparison of the 1D cuts. This is like four cuts along the main high symmetry directions. And this is a definition for these directions. And open cycles is a 30 MeV, black points is a 60 MeV incoming energy, and 120 MeV is a blue points. And the red lines is a DMFT calculations with one scaling parameter for all of them, and this scaling parameter very close to what we expect from conversion data from these units to units of chi double prime. And again, this is a phonons. So the phonons, position of phonons, very in very good agreement with triple axis data, which where spin atomic dynamics of the cerium palladium 3 was measured. And it's another set of 1D cuts. This is a theoretical, this is a DMFT calculations for like omega energy, omega along 1L, half 0L, half L. So, and you can see evolution of the magnetic predicted by DMFT, evolution of the magnetic scattering function of L for an energy. And these lines, 1, 2, and 3, it's a dashed line. They show the direction and position of the energy cuts which shown on these three graphs, on these three, on these three, yeah. So this one, it's a 60 MeV plus minus 5 MeV cut, yeah, and it corresponds to this set of, so this is a, this cut is here, this one is here, and this one is here. And it's the same for 45 and 25 MeV. And again, without practically, no, except scaling factor, yeah, adjustable parameters, the calculated DMFT calculation reproduces data, I would say perfectly, except probably this this graph where much sharper experimental data than theoretical. But for, I mean, overall agreement, in my view, is very good. Now it's temperature dependence. I put this figure again with band structure calculations. This is a MAPS data. Because the data we're taking at fixed angle, and therefore the H in this H is L dependent, so we can't, we have control only over two Miller indices, it's actually show, this is a graph which shows how H depends on L. But since we have four-dimensional chi double prime, we always can choose value, right value, which corresponds to correct value of for each point, correct value in according to this dependence intensity, yeah, chi double prime. So if you took this data and this one-dimensional slide, and if you take this data for one-dimensional slide from the chi double prime and plot together with experimental data, so again, this is a perfect agreement. It's too good to be true, yeah. No, nevertheless, it's a real comparison without any adjustable parameters, as I said, except overall scaling factor. In this case, it's arbitrary units. No, my conclusion. Conclusions, I think it was a first quantitative comparison in elastic neutron scattering on mixed variant materials for dimensional co-omega and for co-omega space with ab initio calculations, and agreement was very good and without any adjustable parameters, so it's mean that on absolute scale this agreement is good. The magnetic fluctuation show much richer structure was implied early toy models of hybridization bands. And our result established that the Q dependence of the scattering caused by particle Hall excitations within FD hybridization bands and its growth in coherent with decreasing temperature. A transition from coherent F-electron band to local moment physics seems to me can be accurately modeled by the latest advances in the ab initio theory. theories of correlated electron system. Thank you very much for your attention.
Thank you. So please, maybe questions, comments. Professor Alexeyev.
Yeah. Could you say how the temperature appears in calculations? What parameter is temperature dependent? What does it mean from the point of view of the model?
As far as I know, again, it's a difficult question for me because it's not a population factor. It's not a Bose population factor. It's nothing to do with this.
Yes.
It's an internal parameter of the DMFT calculations. It's all what I can say.
Okay. And finally, I would like to understand. Typically, we are speaking of the contact temperature as some parameter which provide us the estimation of the speed of spin fluctuations. So it was general point of any paper about such kind of physics. And from another hand, you introduced some band structure. Band structure suppose existing of some correlations. Yeah. Spatial, sure. Time or something. Mm. Therefore, how these two things which looks like excluded one another can be introduced in one model?
No, I think this is an ab initio calculation. It's not a model, actually. It's a, they are not introduced specifically temperature into the system. So the Condor temperature is a part of the calculations. They can calculate it. So, because originally Condor temperature, as far as I know, it was a parameter in some sort of phenomenological model. Yeah, it's not, in this case, you don't need any assumption or any about the value of the Condor temperature. So it's maybe, because what we are dealing with actually here, when we see the, what magnetic response we're measuring, it's a, some sort of transition between, say, some flattish region in the electronic structure, and its energy sets by electronic correlations, and which is actually Condor temperature is also a measure of these electronic correlations. But you don't need to introduce any Condor temperature here, as far as I understand what's.
Yeah, I simply want to understand what is behind. So this is the point that typically when we discuss the spin fluctuations, it's related to some, thermodynamical properties of substance. So they believe that they really exist. Any model of mixed valence compounds supposed.
But if you calculate,
I simply would like to understand what is behind.
If you convert this, if you integrate this data over Q, then you get something which you measure on polycrystalline system, and you got exactly the same what you see in experiment. And then we call the position of the speakers upon the temperature.
Okay, thank you very much. I think that will be coffee break, and so you can try to reach a joint point, because indeed there are some aspects related to many body effects, Condor temperature is many body effects, and band structure is one electron's effects, and so this is a subject of discussion. Yes, Professor Alexeyev?
I simply would like to say that this is very
interesting. Yes, I understood something,
very,
yes.
Very important, point in the science.
Okay. And now let me go to the last scientific. Professor.
Okay. You did the experiments in at ISIS. Would you like to do it here? And what is the possibility? Are there any possibilities to do it here? Or can we improve one of the instruments to do such experiments here?
Well, okay.
It's unlikely that we can do similar experiments here. We need instruments like Murrayan.
The microphone is.
Sorry.
I think a Dirac 2 reactor, it's a white pulse. source, 200 microseconds. So in principle, you can build instruments similar to Merlin. But Merlin, to be correct me, it's a 10 million pounds, right? And it's $1 billion, rubles, sorry.
Okay, thank you. Are you satisfied, Professor Hughes? Yes? Okay, let me... let me offer the floor to Dr. Timoshenko with a scientific report forecasting the NICA complex radiation environment. Please, 25 minutes.
I'd like to tell you about prognostication of the radiation situation around NICA complex facilities. The acceleration complex NICA is compound Monte Factor radiation object. It has no annex in Russia. It's only there in Germany that can be compared to it as regards the research tasks and modern arrangement of the installation. Unlike the affair, our accelerator facilities are not underground and are placed in a very limited area. The principal radiation source of the NICA complex are following. Heavy iron linear accelerator, new facilities, and the former facilities, linear accelerator LU-20. Then booster, then main accelerator of the NICA complex, Nuquatron, then several beam transport channels, then collider, and finally building number 205 for the experiment with fixed target. As you know, NICA will provide a variety of beam species ranging from protons and polarized neutrons to very massive golds. Heavy ions will be accelerated up to kinetic energy of 4.5 GeV per nucleon and the protons up to 12 GeV. The secondary radiation fields are formed at the accelerators due to losses of particles during acceleration process and their interactions with the accelerator's components, targets, equipment, etc. The main radiation component behind radiation shielding is high energy of high energy accelerator. Are neutrons with a very wide energy range. When accelerators are stopped, the main radiation factor is gamma rays due to radioactivity induced in accelerator's equipment. The hardest radiation environment around the NICA facilities will be connected with acceleration of gold ions to maximum energy at an expected intensity of 2 by 10 to the 9th ion per cycle and their storage in the collider rings. It's this mode of operation of the NICA complex that has been chosen for radiation shielding design and consideration of radiation protection issues. It's assumed also that NICA complex operation in this mode can last 5,400 hours per year. For the twofold reduction of beam intensity, the ion lifetime within the collider rings was supposed near 1,500 seconds. In the mode of Nuquatron operation with the collider, the duration of ion bunches injection into collider ring will be near 3 minutes. Between the injection cycles, the Nuquatron will be operate for the experience with a fixed target in the building 205. According to Russian legislation, radiation safety standards in RB 99 and sanitary rules of radiation protection of SPORB 99, the effective dose rate at working places of personal group A must be lower than 12 microsievert per hour. For personal group B, lower than 2.54 microsievert per hour. For the newly designed facility, this level should be two times lower, according to law. For population, they permitted access of the technogenic effective dose over the background must be lower than 1 millisievert per year. It's a very small value. Compliance with above-mentioned requirements is achieved mainly by the following measures. Firstly, biological shielding surrounding the radiation sources. Secondly, radiation zoning for restriction of personnel's radiation exposure duration. Then, interlock system which will prevent personal access to dangerous radiation zones. And system of permanent zonal radiation monitoring with danger warning, biosonic and light signaling devices. Our specialists of our laboratory took part in the design of radiation protection measures and shielding of the following nuclear facilities and installations in recent years. The lab cyclotron complex in Bratislava, Slovakia, subcritical assembly in Dubna on the base of LNP Phasotron in our institute, and iron facility at the IBR2 reactor. And we now have a certain experience and skills in order to done this work, you know, to work in this field. We started work on radiation protection issues of the NICA complex from the first stage of the project in collaboration with its development team. All shielding calculations and forecasts, the radiation environment and the complex were carried out using JANT-4, the modern Monte Carlo code for the simulation of radiation transport in matter, the most powerful and precise tool for this purpose. JANT-4 is a freely available Monte Carlo code developed in CERN for simulation of elementary particles and gamma spaces through matter. At present, not so many Monte Carlo universal code can be used for risk heavy ion transport, MCNP, Fluka, JANT-4, FITS, SHIELD, Russian code, and Mars. This code used different physical models for simulation of nucleus-nucleus reactions. MCNP development, do you see, is a very good code, but is not free, unfortunately. Mars, also from USA, is specialized in a very high energy range. FITS from Japan is, unfortunately, insufficiently reliable. And JANT code was chosen, among others, after verification with available experimental data. It should be noted that apparently up to now there is a lack of experimental data on the double differential neutron yields in the interaction of relativistic superheavy nuclei with matter, which are so needed for our project. Here you see the result of JANT-4 comparison with unique experimental data on neutron yield from thick target bombarded by uranium ion with energy near 1 GeV per nucleon at GSI, and our calculations of the spectra and angular distributions of secondary neutrons depending of ion energy. Different variants of the collider shielding have been calculated and designed during these years. There was a variant with collider placement within building 205 and within individual building semi-subsoil variant and so on. Final variant of the collider placement and construction was approved only in 2011. For the construction of the NICA collider building, the design company Comet was invited. Unfortunately, they do not have the special experience of solving problem of radiation protection accelerator, particularly like NICA complex. They may be able to perform only simplest engineering calculations, and we helped them at all stages of the project design. First of all, we estimated the realistic losses of gold nuclei at all stages of acceleration, transport and storage of the beam due to various reasons. Main causes of the ion beam losses are following: residual gas in the vacuum pipe, intra-beam scattering of ions, large amplitudes of betatron oscillations, recombination of ions with electrons from the beam cooling system, and beam injection and extraction systems. In order to avoid the beam hollow, special beam catchers will be mounted in the booster and the collider for the beam aperture restriction. These catchers are powerful local radiation sources, as well as the beam injection and extraction devices. Losses due to residual gas and intra-beam scattering are uniformly distributed over the rings. The beam losses due to recombination are located near the electronic cooling system. We took into account all processes of the secondary radiation formation due to ion beam losses. On the left, you see the simplified construction of the catcher, and on the right, scheme of interaction of the secondary hadrons from the catchers with elements of collider magnetic optic. The ions lost due to residual gas and interbeam scattering enter to the inner surface of the vacuum pipe with very small angles, from 0 to 1 degree relative to the surface. The incident points are uniformly distributed over the whole surface of the vacuum pipe. By the Monte Carlo code, these events were stochastically uniform selected, as well as the angle sampling within 0 to 1 degree interval. Here are presented some examples of our simulations of secondary neutrons from catcher irradiated by gold ions. This is a general plan of the collider with the placement of main radiation sources. The total amount of the catchers in both collider rings are 48 local sources, and the catcher losses are distributed equally. Additional losses in the sum catchers 1, 2, 3, and 24 prim, 23 prim, 22 prim will be owing to a combination of ions with cooling electrons in proportional 50, 30, and 20 persons respectively. The other local sources are kickers and septum magnets in the ion beam inlets to the ring. Total duration of the collider run per year is assumed equal 5,400 hours. For the shielding calculation, the detailed 3D mathematical model of the collider is all additional buildings and dwellings has been developed. Here are the cross-section of the collider and ion transport channel tunnels in the insertions, up and low. The detailed construction of the collider ring equipment and their positions were taken into account also because the magnetic optic element impact on the secondary hadron field within the collider tunnel. Here you see one photo period of the rings with all elements, catcher, dipole and correcting magnets, quadrupole lenses. In the center, you see the cross section of the dipole magnets, and on the right, the model within the cryostat for jump for calculations. Some words about neutron propagation through a concrete shielding. Due to high energy of the secondary neutron, attenuation lengths with the concrete will be about half of a meter only, and 2 meter thickness concrete shield will reduce neutron flux in 8 to 10 times only. Therefore, all dwellings adjacent to the tunnel wall are the forbidden area at running collider. The territory around far end of collider are also forbidden area and will be fenced. At large distance from the collider, the radiation fields will be formed by other mechanisms. By multiscattering air and ground neutrons, so-called Skanchein neutrons, typical named. In order to simulate the Skanchein effect around the collider by the Zeeland flow code, the big volume of air around collider was considered in the program. Here is a scheme of the Skanchein neutron field forming near the collider. In this slide, the radiation zoning of the working collider territory is shown. Red color, zone of forbidden access. Exception are the part of MPD and SPD building where the personnel of group A can work. Around the collider, the dose rate should be less than 1.2 microsievert per hour for personnel group B. Just behind the laboratory body, behind the fence of the laboratory, the annual dose should be no more 1 millisievert per year. This dose will be defined by the Skanchein neutrons mainly, with as a mixture of gamma rays. Here are the result of radiation environment forecasting in different critical points around the collider. The contribution of different radiation factor are shown also in this table. The dose level in all points will completely meet so high HAD requirements. The gamma ray contribution to the total doses are not shown in this table, but they are not more 5 persons for the Schoenstein neutron fields and no more 7 persons just behind the collider shielding. On the left, you see the planet time structure of the collider operation with ion lifetime near 1,500 seconds, and on the right, the radial distribution of the Schoenstein neutron annual effective dose. The most hard requirement concerning the annual dose of population is satisfied with enough reserve. Next problem, induced radioactivity simulation for the NICA collider. Radioactivity induced by primary ions and secondary hadrons in the beamline equipment of the NICA extraction complex will make the main contribution to the personal dose during the maintenance work. The sources of the strongest radioactivity within the collider tunnel will be beam catchers radiated by gold ions with maximum energy. We preliminarily carried out the verification of Jan 4 and shield calls with the most suitable data on residual radioactivity in the experiment in which six stainless steel and copper targets were bombarded with near 1 GeV per nucleon uranium ion in GSI experiment. The results of the code verification are demonstrated in this slide. Total activity simulated by the JANT 4 code are estimated up to 1.5 times. It's quite acceptable for the radiation protection purpose, as overestimation is preferable to underestimation in our case, no doubt. In this table, the predicted levels of special specific radioactivity as the catches for different time intervals are presented also. These are the time diagrams of the total residual activity of the catcher still during the first month of operation and to the end of the collider operation, planned 10 years planned, as I know. Induced radioactivity in air within the collider tunnel without special ventilation was estimated also. Booster. Next object of the NICA complex design is the booster synchrotron for the formation and acceleration of beams of the required energy intensity to be injected into the nucleotron. The booster will be arranged within the old magnet arc of the synchrotron in laboratory high energy physics, building number one. For reconstruction of building number one for the booster arrangement, the contract with design company PICA has been concluded. The situation with PICA company was the same as with company Comet. Not the same, worse, because PICA company has no in his staff any specialist on radiation protection, absolutely. Building number one was constructed as an ordinary building with relative thin wall, large window openings and light roof, and has no shielding capacity. Unfortunately, the massive magnet arc of the synchrotron is also not a good radiation shielding for the booster ring because of numerous gaps and open windows. You see this situation in this photo. You see a big opening in the iron arc. A mathematical model of synchrophazotron ring with gaps and openings was developed. The detailed construction of all elements of booster magnet optics, beam catchers and vacuum pipe within the iron work were taken into account. A crucial zone in terms of compliance with the radiation safety requirements is an area near the boundary behind the fence of the laboratory site adjacent to building number one, where the annual dose must be less than 1 millizer per year. What's important, this dose level in this area is formed by several radiation sources, booster, collider, nucleotron, heavy ion linear accelerator, building 205 and ion transport channels. Most powerful source of radiation is nucleotron, of course, which unfortunately has no radiation shielding about the synchrotron tunnel, after all now. Neither nucleotron, no building 205 radiation shielding project has been developed yet. Thus, both of these sources are uncertain at present. Therefore, for calculation the radiation environment around the booster, excluding nucleotron and building 205, a quota has been set for the booster, which is 0.3 times of the established loss limit. Calculations show that magnet oak with size thickness of 155 centimeters of iron with openings would reduce the dose rate only a maximum two times compared with the situation when the oak is completely absent. It's due to scattered neutrons from the openings. It's necessary to shut all openings by concrete plugs and close the linear spaces between the quadrants of the synchropositron rings. This is plan of the building number one with booster and nucleotron rings and the main radiation sources. Beam catchers, four in each quadrant, summary 16. Residual gas and intra-beam scattering of ions, recombination of ions with electrons from the system of electron cooling. Their losses will be concentrated in first quadrant catchers. Ion stripping target in the third linear space. Booster nucleotron transfer channel, a trap for beam of ions with no purpose charged state. Direction R is the shortest distance to the laboratory border, to the fence, near 70 meters from the building number one wall. You see here the examples of radial distribution of scantia neutrons, annual effective dose from various booster sources at the closest openings in the magnet walk. Thus, if all protection measures for the booster will be taken, its contribution to radiation environment at the laboratory side border will not exceed the quota, and there will be a reserve, big reserve, for the nucleotron and building 205. Radiation zoning around building number one at the booster is shown here with quotation. The annual dose at the fence will be 0.15 millisievert for the booster only. Maximum can be 1 millisievert, as you know, per year, and we have a big reserve in this case. What will be the nucleotron contribution to the total dose in this crucial point behind the fence? We carried out to model experiments and compared their results with the calculation by the Jan 4 code for the nucleotron without top shielding of the tunnel. At the experiments, we measured the radial distribution of the neutron dose rate when the beam of high energy neutrons were lost completely in the nucleotron rings, 100% losses without extraction. Real beam losses in the nucleotron, well, Goldstein acceleration, was assumed to be 5%. Knowing these losses and knowing the ratio of the neutron yields in the interaction with the target neutrons and Goldsteins, we can roughly estimate the radiation environment around nucleotron working for the collider. Jan 4 simulation and rough recalculation of experimental data with neutrons have shown that without top shielding, the annual dose from each to the border of laboratory site will be impermissible, more than 5 millisievert per year. Thus, the creation of shielding under the nucleotron tunnel is necessary for realization of NICA scientific program in full. Otherwise, the program of experiments with a fixed target in building 205 should be greatly rejected. Design of the nucleotron radiation shielding will be our next task for the nearest time. And I hope this problem will be solved, of course. Thank you very much for your attention.
Thank you. So, please, maybe questions, comments. Please, and comments, yes?
Yes, I have very short remark. First, I would like to underline great importance of the work which was done by Professor Timoshenko and his colleagues. he explained what is peculiar situation with all regulations exist around knowledge of such sources of radiation. Knowledge is rather limited, and actually they produce some pioneering work. It is very, very important, and practical importance is really great. So even owing to this activity, we were able to pass through state expertise. All calculations were, or presentation of radiation situation around NECA complex were based on results of this work. So, and my some advice to suggest for neighbor PEC committee PAC,
particle physics.
Yeah, PAC for particle physics.
Yes.
To listen also such presentation of to repeat this presentation well, of PAC for particle
I'm
physics
ready.
Also.
Sure. I agree with you. It is very important, and let me, on the behalf of our PAC, express our gratitude to Professor Tymoshenko for indeed enough comprehensive reports about very important aspects of the NECA collider systems related to the radiation damage of the environment. Let me remember that when the Large Hadron Collider was constructed and was a whole program related to the safety, to the different aspects of the environmental damage. And so I think that also in the context of NECA projects, these aspects should be very, very, very important, and we indeed strongly recommend to present these aspects to the particle physics PAC, because the NECA projects is under its supervision, yes, of this committee. Okay. Thank you very much again. So now we're coming to coffee break and to examination of the poster session. About 16 poster works are presented. You have got the lists of with abstracts of the poster presentation. Please combine coffee break with poster analysis in order to come back in 40-45 minutes at the beginning of that 12 in order to finish today meeting with the last session related to poster presentation and other aspects. Thank you.